any resident in Saudi Arabia, you get to see all of your data in one application. You get to see your driver license, you get to see all of your IDs, you get to see all of your legal documents across the governments. You even get to see the grades of your children in that application. So it's a content issue. I read a study when ChatGPT was first released in 2022 that only 0.04% of its content was Arabic. So you can imagine how poor of a performance ChatGPT will produce. I believe it's about the communication with the executives. If you clearly think of AI and emerging technologies as an investment with a direct return in X years, I don't think you are addressing the bigger picture. To me, separating AI from...
Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast, where AI meets leadership. And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CIO Podcast, where we explore the world of AI leadership across the enterprise landscape. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and on this show, we connect with visionaries who are driving AI transformation in leading companies and government agencies around the world. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Abdullah Altawad, Data Analytics Senior Director at Takomol Holding. Abdullah brings over a decade of experience in data analytics and AI space with an impressive track record in leadership, team development, and delivering substantial business value through data-driven initiatives. Prior to his current role at Takomol Holding, Abdullah served as the Data Analytics and AI General Manager at SDAIA, Saudi Arabia's Data and AI Authority, and has held various data science and engineering positions throughout his career. Abdullah, it's a pleasure to have you on the CIO Podcast today.
Pleasure is mine, Sanjay. Looking forward to a fruitful conversation.
Wonderful. Abdullah, we have a global audience. These are people who are chief AI officers and leaders of AI enterprise of large companies and government agencies around the world. Can you just start by briefly talking about your journey into AI leadership and what inspired you to pursue a career focused on data analytics and AI?
It's a very interesting question, Sanjay. So I started my career, believe it or not, as a defense engineer. I used to be a telecom engineer, and I worked in the UK for a company called Leonardo, which used to develop radar systems for Typhoon aircrafts. So... I started there, and I was simply fascinated by the concept of what used to be called pattern recognition back then. AI was more on not in the driver's seat, so it used to be called pattern recognition and machine learning. I decided to take my master's degree in the US. I went to Northwestern University. I got my master's degree. And when I returned back home, it was the initiation phase of SADAIA, the Saudi Data and AI Authority. I was lucky enough to join them as a senior data scientist. And I guess the rest is history. I stayed there for five years. I consider myself to be extremely lucky to be part of that great organization. We boosted the data and AI scene in Saudi Arabia. As far as I know, Saudi Arabia is the only country that has a minister in the cabinet focusing on data and AI. And that also gives you the seriousness of the country in handling all data and AI related things. So I started there. Then I moved to Takamal Holding, where I'm responsible for the data and AI initiatives in the labor market, because what Takamal does is we do digital transformation for the labor market, and included in that a number of AI initiatives. We just started during 2024 to really focus on the AI, and we're hopefully that, and we are actually calling 2025 the year of AI. So hopefully we see a lot of initiatives see the light of day to serve the labor market.
No, that's fantastic. Abdullah, for a lot of people who might not be aware, can you you know, describe a little bit more of what Takamol Holdings does. And when you talk about labor market, just explain that. And then if you can also explain a little bit about the SDAIA and its role, because as you rightly said, probably the only country which has an AI minister, there's a lot of fascination about what Saudi Arabia is doing in AI. So you have a front seat. So please tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on there.
Okay, so I will start with the story of Sadaya, then I will move to Takamol, because that is sure. My journey, basically. So Sadaya is mandated to alleviate and regulate the scene of data and AI. I used to work on the execution side, not the regulation side. So the way Sadaya is constructed, it has three different arms, one for research, one for operation, and one for regulation. Starting with the regulation, Sadaya is taking the driver's seat in issuing a lot of regulations when it comes to data and AI. We are following a model that is very close to the GDPR in Europe. We are more on the, I wouldn't say over-regulated, but extremely regulated side of things, because the country would like to make sure that all the services and service providers as well are regulated enough to ensure that the privacy of the subjects is maintained. The other part was the operation side. The operation side of Sadaya is called the National Information Center, which I used to be part of. We basically develop and deploy a number of solutions. Maybe the most famous of which is the Tawakkalna application. I'm sure you've never heard of it. It's extremely famous in Saudi, and it used to run the lockdown, the COVID lockdown. So we initiated that application in May 2020, where people used to get their permits to leave their homes and come back, et cetera, et cetera. And that application has grown to be the government super app. Nowadays, any resident in Saudi Arabia, you get to see all of your data in one application. You get to see your driver license, you get to see all of your IDs, you get to see all of your legal documents across the government. You even get to see the grades of your children in that application. So it's a one-stop wow. shop where you just log in with your ID and see virtually everything that the government has about you. And it has significantly improved the quality of life for the residents of Saudi Arabia. Last but not least, in Sadaya, the research arm, they are basically responsible for pushing the envelope in Saudi Arabia. Back in LEAP, last LEAP, they announced our LLM. By our, I mean our national large language model, which is called Allam, which translates to the knowledgeable person. So basically, they published Allam model on Azure. They are working with Lenovo to publish it on their machines. So they are developing some deep tech pieces here and there. So those three components, they constitute what we call Sadaya or SDAIA. I hope I give enough of a brief on that. So moving to Takamol. Takamol is working in multiple sectors, but the crown jewel of Takamol, or the major sector that we are working in, is the labor market. We are considered a platinum partner for the Ministry of Human Resources and Social Development, where since 2016, actually, we are almost the exclusive partner in developing digital transformation solutions. At the moment, we are sitting on a number of systems. Maybe the most notable is a system we call QIWA, which basically handles all the work contracts between employers and employees across the country, whether it's private or non-private sector. That has created a lot of transparency to both employers and employees. It has given the ministry the ability to regulate and ensure fairness in their contracts, to ensure that their these contracts are compliant. And recently, we are trying to add more emerging tech on top of that to improve the user experience of our clients. So again, that is a very high-level overview of Takamal and what we do.
No, that's very, very helpful. So Abdullah, just if I may ask a few questions about Sadaya and a few questions about Takamal for our listeners, because what you said is just incredible, fascinating. One of the things you said Sadaya has done is basically digitized the citizen experience of interfacing with government, which we don't even see, at least I can speak for being in the United States. You said you have all your documents all in one place, so to speak. Now, obviously, that has tremendous value because you said your grades, maybe even your medical records and things of that nature, because right now in the United States, we almost have to run from place to place to place. But it does raise the issue of privacy and data security. How is Sadaya kind of managing that issue? That would be one. And the second thing is, you said there is a regulation which is a little bit like GDPR that has been implemented. Is that for data privacy and data security? That's just one question, and then I have a few others.
So starting with the last, yes, we do have the PDPL, mm-hmm. the Personal Data Protection Law. It went into effect last September, mm-hmm. I think, which follows closely the GDPR. Okay. And all the other systems, the right to be forgotten, et cetera, all the regulations around it. It's certainly an overhead for everyone working in the data scene in Saudi, but it's certainly necessary as well. Back to your first question. I think, compared to the US at least, there is a fundamental difference that enables Saudi to be in this position. The US has a federal concept where Saudi Arabia is centralized by design. So if you have, if all of your systems are built in a central way, it's much easier to create those services on top of it, where the US, every state has its own autonomy. So it's much more difficult to integrate all of these systems together. So privacy is definitely a concern. The government and the private sector are taking it extremely seriously. We do host all of our systems in what we call a Class C data center, which is a data center that is rigorously audited by the government. So that ensures that that data center has a high level of security and privacy regulations. Mm-hmm. All of these systems has by law to be hosted geographically in Saudi Arabia, which has led to a number of hyperscalers to open their data centers in Saudi. At the moment, we do have Oracle, mm-hmm. we do have GCP, we do have Alibaba from China, and a number of others are coming, AWS, Azure, etc. All of this to drive that movement. Usually there is heavy background checks on anyone working in data, just to make sure that privacy is conserved from process perspective, tools, and from personnel perspective as well. And this suite of solutions is working so far, and it's one of the more heavily regulated fields in the government. We take it extremely seriously when it comes to data.
No, so that's very, very helpful to know that data is obviously taken very, very seriously. The other point you made about Sadaya, which I find very, very fascinating, is that Saudi Arabia is building its own language model in its own language. Because the big issue for large language models is the worry that currently the large language models are English and Western society driven, and we might forget the history and the culture of civilizations like Saudi Arabia, which go hundreds or thousands of years behind. So it's very good to hear that that is happening. Is that something that is already in play? Is that being used, or will that be ready at some time in the future, Abdullah?
So the Alam language model is already deployed. You bring a very fascinating and interesting point, Sanjay, if you allow me to elaborate a bit on it.
Sure.
Developing an LLM model is a subject of the content of that language on the internet. As we all know, the vast majority of content online is English. Even Saudi people and Arab people are generating content in English and consuming content in English, especially the younger generation. So it's a content issue. I read a study when ChatGPT was first released in 2022 that only 0.04% of its content was Arabic. So you can imagine how poor of a performance ChatGPT will produce because it's getting trained on a number of models. And fun fact, we are in Takamal, we are also developing services for other languages as well. Urdu, Hindi, Turkish, Philippines, and other languages, because Persian. Our labor market includes, it's a multinational. So we see drastic differences in quality and performance when it comes to different languages. And that's why Sadaya has invested a lot of money and time and resources in developing an Arabic-based model because we take pride in our language. And we believe, as you said, the Arabic language preserved big history. And we don't want to lose that in the face of this wave of technology. So we want to preserve that, and we want machines to speak that language properly.
No, that's very good to know, because I really believe that that's going to be very, very critical, especially as we march towards this revolution. Abdullah, you talked about what Takamal is doing in terms of labor markets. There is a issue, and I don't know if Takamal is addressing that, that there are two basic issues: that current workforce needs to be reskilled for what is coming with this transformation. And also, there are all kinds of reports, and some of it is actually happening, at least in the United States, where the application of AI is going to replace at least certain kind of positions, whether it's in customer service, coding, and on and on and on. Is Takamal involved in that, or what is your view in terms of how you see this thing coming about?
That's a great question, and it has a number of dimensions to it. And as a technology person, I tend to fall into the trap of focusing on technology and forgetting about people. So if you allow me to start from people's perspective. I'm super proud to work in a company that truly values the human input, and we don't view humans, whether within Takamal or within the labor market, as a disposable resource. So we are not forgetting about the human part of this journey. We do have a full vertical in Takamal that is focusing on upskilling the labor market. They are designing sector-specific journeys and courses to make sure that sector is upskilled enough to face the new technologies and to implement its mandate in a proper way. When it comes to technology, we also are working in that. We are exploring a number of solutions where you would have your own AI career advisor. And that career advisor would basically interview you. The AI will do an interview for you. It will read your CV. After the interview, it will identify the gaps in your skills, and we call that a skills passport. When you develop that skill passport, it will guide you through a number of courses that will hopefully close the skill gap that you have compared to the position that you want to be. So you would log into that system, and you will tell the system, I want to be a chief data officer, for instance. And it will parse your CV, and it will say you're a director level. At the moment, you need to take these specific courses to hopefully reach that position in a couple of years. It's a very ambitious project. And as you know, Sanjay, the emerging technology-based projects and AI projects, they have a high probability of failure for a number of reasons. But again, I'm glad to work in a place where we are ambitious enough, confident enough to take a crack at it. And fingers crossed, hopefully it yields the results that we are hoping to reach. Because otherwise, the labor market will be in big trouble, whether in Saudi or not. If we don't aggressively try to adopt these tools and try to change them to be a friend of the employee, not an enemy for it, there will be big trouble in the future.
No, so that's very helpful. So they will have a personal career advisor. And there is, obviously, you're putting the people first in this whole transformation, which is very good to know, Abdullah. Mm. Abdullah, one of the questions I get asked a lot is, why is Saudi and maybe even UAE, but let's talk about Saudi, so going so aggressively towards this AI technology? Very few countries have taken such a proactive approach. I would say maybe after the United States or China, I would say probably you would say Saudi is in the top 3-4 countries that has made a commitment, not just in terms of saying things, but doing things, making the investments, etc. What is there, for our listeners, they are very curious, why is this such an important thing for Saudi Arabia?
Okay, so in my opinion, you can approach this question from two different angles. The first and most important angle is the enablers. You shouldn't reach for something unless you truly believe that you have the enablers that will take you there. We do believe we have two significant enablers. One, we do have a youth or a young workforce that is largely digitally native and can easily adopt these technologies. I believe around 70% of the Saudi population is below 30. And that is a huge advantage when it comes to adopting new technologies. The other advantage, which was addressed on multiple occasions from government officials, the last one I can recall is our Minister of Energy, Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, where he talked about the race, quote-unquote, for AI will boil down to the countries that are energy efficient. And guess what? Saudi Arabia is one of the giants of conventional energy when it comes to oil and renewable energy as well. There is a huge move towards working on renewable energy when it comes to solar power. For instance, you've been to Saudi, you see how much sun we have.
Yes.
So we do have an abundance of that. And we believe those two enablers will put us in a great position to be a leader on that field for the long term. The other angle that is in addition to enablers is that the ambition that we have. We are a very ambitious country, and I understand some people who are far away from Saudi, they are skeptical about the ambition when it comes to the mega projects that we have. Some people question those. But if you come to Saudi and see the transformation, you would see where this is coming from. That ambition, Sanjay, we truly believe we wouldn't reach it without adopting all the possible tools and technologies that we have, and AI is one of them. In the panel that we participated together back in Leap, I briefly addressed that and said some of the targets that we have for our Vision 2030 they would be impossible without being extremely smart and extremely creative. Using AI hopefully will lead us to reaching those objectives by 2030 and subsequent objectives beyond 2030.
No, that's and I myself was a witness very little time ago, Abdullah, that to see the transformation that is happening in the country. And you're absolutely right. It's a country of young people. That's all I saw around me is young people who are digitally native. It is truly a country on the move. There is just no question in my mind. Abdullah, you work now for two large organizations. When I talk to chief AI officers and leaders of AI, one of the questions that they are getting a lot of, some of the pressure from their boards or CEOs is the return on investment, showing the return on investment for some of these investments that they're making into these enterprises. What are your thoughts in terms of the ROI for AI across the enterprise, whether it is in Takomal or Sadaya? How do you think of it?
So speaking of ROI, usually the ROI is not financial, especially in the beginning. I mean, look at OpenAI. When they developed ChatGPT, mm-hmm. they had no clear monetization model in mind. They invested hundreds of millions into that model and to that product, and now they are reaping the reward. They are being labeled as a pioneer when it comes to large language models, and they are building a lot of applications on top of it. I believe it's about the communication with the executives. If you clearly think of AI and emerging technologies as an investment with a direct return in X years, I don't think you are addressing the bigger picture. It's actually a race. You need to be in that race. You need to be courageous enough to risk some investment that will probably fail, but the return on those investments, which is one possible return of that investment, is that you will develop a great infrastructure, you will penetrate a market, you will develop a lot of knowledge in that technology, which will make your next investment much more feasible and has a much higher chance of success. If your risk margin is low, I don't think you will make it in that scene. It takes a lot of risk to invest in that, and that risk will definitely pay off on the long term. On the short term, it will definitely look bad in the books, unless you are extremely lucky and you hit the jackpot from the first or second project.
So short term looking bad, long term going to look pretty good and will pay off, and you have to be patient. That kind of leads to the second question. Because of this pressure of ROI, etc., do you think people are hyping AI a little too much, so that we are setting the bar so high so that people say, where is the return? Where is the return? I want the return today. Do you think it is a little overhyped in your view, Abdullah?
I do believe so, yes. However, the way we are looking at AI is we are putting AI in a path of failure in a lot of our projects, because AI, by the end of the day, is not a standalone technology. It's there to augment other services. It's like salt and food, Sanjay. If you have too much salt is great. But if you have too much salt, you are ruining your dish. If you have no salt, you are ruining your dish as well. So you need to incorporate just enough components that are AI-based. And the end objective is to make your service better, not to make it AI-driven. If leaders and entities have that mentality, I think it will increase the chance of success. I don't believe that AI requires huge investments when it comes to application development, not deep tech. Deep tech definitely requires a whole lot more, but incorporating AI in your applications, it doesn't require too much of an investment if you are smart about it and if you think of the salt and food analogy. I think that's the right balance.
So making sure there is just the right amount of salt, not too much and not too less.
Yeah.
That brings me to the other question is, Abdullah, in terms of the talent that you have to hire, how do you go about looking for the right kind of people that you want to address? Because this is also a platform where people are listening to you and saying, okay, I want to work for Takomal. I have a background in AI and things like that. What do you look for when you look for attracting the right kind of people?
Okay, so when it comes to AI, for me, and this might be a controversial take, to me, separating AI from data, it doesn't make sense. From data analytics and the data scene in general, because as you know, AI is heavily dependent on data, whatever data that is. So the fundamentals of data needs to be there if you want to work in AI. You need to be a competent data engineer or a data scientist, or preferably have a bit of both. Mm-hmm. You cannot just be an AI developer without having those principles, because on your day-to-day activity, you will encounter a lot of tasks that require such a skill set. You need to also be very competent when it comes to software engineering as well. By the end of the day, AI development is nothing but writing code, and writing code, you need those principles. You need to write efficient pieces of code. You need to know how to use the widespread tools when it comes to development, when it comes to deployment cycle, when it comes to quality assurance step in the development cycle. From management projects perspective, you need to be very familiar with the Scrum mentality or the Scrum approach. You need to be, again, familiar with the Agile approach as well. And your typical soft skills suite. You need to be a good communicator, because if you don't communicate well, you will rub salt to the wound of overhyping AI with the business. It's very hard. Some of the hardest discussions that you will have as an AI engineer or an AI developer is to manage the expectations of business, because non-technical people view AI as some sort of magic, that once you deploy it, it will solve all of your problems. Managing that expectation is extremely critical in the success of the project, because some initiatives and projects are actually great pieces of solutions, but due to overhyping them, they don't make it to the final stages of production systems. So these are the components that I think anyone who wants to work in AI should at least cover the majority of.
So for our listeners, strong data skills, Scrum, good communication skills, ability to set expectations right is, I think, what Abdullah is saying. And I think that's a pretty good broad perspective. Abdullah, just to conclude, where do you see AI heading? There's a big talk right now in the U.S. In terms of that we are very close to AGI or whatever you want to call AGI, etc. What are your thoughts in terms of how and where we are heading with this? Now, agents is a big thing. Multimodal was a big thing. For our listeners who have a hard time just keeping pace with all of this stuff.
So, if I take you back, Sanjay, back in 2019, I used to have discussions with a couple of colleagues regarding the large language models concept. And we used to agree that what we see today, we wouldn't see into 20 or 30 years. So it's very hard to speculate where this is going. Mm-hmm. I believe with the agentic AI and the recent breakthroughs in Gen AI in general, we will see some approximation of AGI, but I believe true AGI, the textbook definition of AGI, the self-aware AI, I don't think we will see that. I don't think that's possible. But again, I have been proven wrong. So I'm excited to see what's ahead, but I'm slightly pessimistic when it comes to that future, because things could go horribly wrong if we don't intervene and we don't control where this wave is going.
Yeah. And as I said, there are conversations being held that it could be a few years where we would have some form of AGI, but that's good to know. Finally, Abdullah, in Takamal or Sadaya, and I asked this at our panel too, you've seen what DeepSeek did from an open source standpoint. It opened up its weights and everything else. What are your thoughts in terms of the use of open source technologies at large enterprises, whether it's Takamal, Sadaya? For our listeners who are enterprise leaders, what do you think should they be thinking about?
I think it's very similar to what happened to softwares in general, where we've seen in recent years how open source has gained a lot of traction, and big mm-hmm. companies are providing services on top of open source software. I believe large language models are headed towards that path, where you will have some providers with closed source services and some providers sitting on top of, as you mentioned, DeepSeek or Llama or any other open source mm-hmm. model. I truly believe open source will eventually win this race. It's a question of when, not a question of if. Open source gives highly sensitive enterprises the ability to locally host the model, which is a huge comparative advantage. You know, some of the more sensitive data centers where it's a red line to share their data across any external organization regardless, they are leaning towards hosting their own models. Some establishments mm-hmm. as well find it more cost effective to use open source models, especially those with heavy engineering teams. The open source mm-hmm. models that are hosted on some of the hyperscalers will be the go-to options for business-oriented organizations where they don't want to invest heavily in their engineering teams, and they will just go and subscribe to these services provided on the hyperscalers. But it's definitely an interesting development, what's happening with DeepSeek recently, and I'm excited to see where this leads us all in the LLM and Gen AI scene.
Oh, that's great. A lot of excitement on open source that's coming in. Abdullah, at the end, we basically asked just a series of quick questions that need basically a one-word answer from you. This is to give our listeners some perspective of what you think. So you ready?
Let's go.
Okay. Abdullah, cloud or on-prem for AI infrastructure?
Cloud for everything.
Okay. Cloud for everything. Okay. Python or R?
Definitely Python.
TensorFlow or PyTorch?
I'm indifferent. Both are great, I think.
Okay. Okay. Indifferent. In your view, what is the most valuable skill for an AI leader, technical or communication?
Ooh. Assuming they meet the minimum threshold, it's definitely communication.
Okay. Biggest AI challenge, is it data, talent, or culture?
Culture.
Synthetic data or human generated data? Which one would you prefer?
Definitely human generated.
Awesome. This is fantastic. That brings us to the end of our episode with Abdullah, who's really taken a time to provide his insights and experiences with our audience. Abdullah, your journey from systems engineering to AI leadership really provides valuable lessons for anybody who's trying to navigate this rapidly evolving field, and your insights into what's happening in Saudi is just tremendously helpful as, you know, the world looks at Saudi becoming a leader, especially with its young population, with localized, large language and small language models. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe to the CIO podcast. And if you're looking to connect with Abdullah, you can find him on LinkedIn. Join us next time as we continue our exploration of AI leadership with another distinguished guest. Until then, I'm Sanjay Puri, reminding you to keep innovating and leading with data. Abdullah, thank you so much. This was fantastic. I had 15 other questions that could have gone on, but thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Sanjay. It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and I hope this was informative, fruitful, and enjoyable to your audience.
It was fantastic.